Good morning. Today's daf in Yevamos Kof Chaf 120. Just a short couple of days before we finish the Masechta. Here we are in the last parak of the Masechta, 16th parak, and we're back to the topic of Eidus Isha, a woman testifying so that she can get remarried. Eidus is needed in order for a woman to be able to remarry. In the Rachmanus, her husband died, and she now needs the information in order for her to move on to the next chapter of her life. So what kind of Eidus is necessary? So this is now the third parak in the Masechta in which we're discussing this critical topic. The first time we discussed this in the 10th parak, where we discussed it there extensively. And then we discussed it in the last couple of parakim, right? The second to last parak and this last parak of the Masechta, we're discussing this topic. Let's go over the ground rules. A woman can testify on behalf of herself, right? This is something that we've already established, that she comes back in Medina Sayam. She and her husband went on travel, and she could testify... And Rachmanus, her husband, died. So she can testify about herself. And obviously, this is a significant halachic allowance. She is now going to be married to another man if she's not telling the truth. We're talking about Eishes Ish. We're talking about adultery. If in fact, there's a brother, surviving brother, so then we're talking about Eishes Ach, another Erev on the Torah. Okay, but nevertheless, though, she has Nemanus to testify about herself, to allow herself to marry either another man or her brother. Okay. What else did we learn recently is that there are women who cannot testify, certain women cannot testify about one another because of the natural animosity that exists between these women. So the big five. So we, a couple days ago, over Shabbos, we learned about the big five. That's Kuf Yud Zayin. So a woman cannot testify about her mother-in-law, her sister-in-law, her co-wife, her sister-in-law. I know two different types of sister-in-laws. Her sister-in-law and Bas Baala, and the daughter of her husband, her stepdaughter. So a woman cannot testify about these women because of the natural animosity that exists between this woman and these five women. Okay, so good. So what do we have on the table right now? There are two pieces of information. The upcoming mission we're about to start is so smart. It's such a clever Mishnah, but you just basically have to balance these two pieces of information. A woman can testify about herself, but she cannot testify about certain women, one of them being her co-wife or her yevimta, right? Her sister-in-law, meaning her husband's brother's wife. Okay, so these are the women that she can't testify about. Okay, so now let's start with the Mishnah. Kuf Yatesamid Beis, the Mishnah begins. Shtei Yevamazu. Amaris Meis Bali, Vizu Amaris Meis Bali. Okay, so, consider the following. The brothers went away, they took their wives with them. The brothers did not come back. Here comes the wives back, and unfortunately they have terrible news to share with everybody, and that is that their husbands died. And each one is reporting about themselves. My husband died. Okay, so good. So now they can remarry, right? No, they can't. And the reason why they can't is as follows. Because now take the following into consideration. Even though their principal testimony is regarding themselves, but you can't ignore the fact that they're also testifying on behalf of somebody else. Meaning from each woman's perspective, right? Rachel, Leah. Okay, just to have a conversation. So when Leah is testifying that her husband died, she's also saying that my sister-in-law, right? This is now my husband's brother's wife. My sister-in-law now is going to be exempt from Yibum, right? In other words, her Zika now is lifted. Okay, so that's what Leah is saying. So even though she's principally testifying about herself, but you have to consider the consequence regarding her sister-in-law. Conversely, same thing from Rachel. When Rachel's testifying about herself, she's also testifying about Leah as well. Here's the problem. The problem is that these women are sister-in-laws to one another, and they can't testify about one another. So despite the fact that you have credibility vis-a-vis you, but you don't have credibility vis-a-vis her. And so, basically now, because of this particular scenario, they are both now locked into this position where they can't remarry because of the incidental testimony that's coming from the other. Okay. Now again, it's a clever Mishnah. You have to really think it through. Okay, good. So Zu Ameris Meis ba'ali v'zu ameres. So zu asur mimnei ba'ala shal zu. V'zu asur mimnei ba'ala shal zu. Okay. L'zu edim v'l'zu ein edim. So now all the Mishnah is going to do is basically play around a little bit with the variables. Let's say one of the women is not testifying, but now she has edim. In other words, she has corroborating information that her husband, in fact, is dead. So eshe eshla edim asura. So for the woman who has edim, so she herself is prohibited. Right? I know, by the way, it doesn't seem fair, but again, a fair over here is not the operative issue. The operative issue is, it's going to be now, on what basis am I getting married? On which credibility am I getting married? So for the woman who has edim, so she, vis-a-vis herself, doesn't need to testify about herself. But her sister-in-law, so her incidental testimony regarding her is going to now lock her in. Because the only way she can marry another man is only if there is no surviving brother. How does she know that there's no surviving brother? Oh, because of the reporting of her Yevimta. In other words, the woman who can't testify on her behalf. Now flip it around. Now look at it from the other side. In other words, from the wife who is giving her own testimony. So vis-a-vis herself, she's saying her husband died. Fine. What about her? What about her Zika with her brother? That's being issued by good reporting, meaning Edim are coming to testify. So the woman who doesn't have Edim, she actually now will be allowed to remarry. Okay? We'll do this another way. In other words, same point, we're just going to do this another way. There's not a point in the Edim. In other words, it releases the woman. That's all. It's just a variable now that removes the Edus issue. So the lezubanim lezuain banim ishla banim mutaras veshein la banim asura. We're just doing this another way. It's the same point. We're just doing this another way. Let's say one of the women have children. So the woman who has children. So for her, there's no yibum consideration. There's no zika. So now when she's reporting that my husband has died and she's the one with children. So again, from her perspective, so legabi herself, she's fine. The problem is that she's got a brother-in-law. And how does she know her brother-in-law is dead? Because of the reporting of her sister-in-law? No, she's locked in. But now let's look from the woman who does not have children. So the woman who does not have children, so regarding herself, she's believed. Legabe, her brother. The brother doesn't need Yibum. The brother had surviving children. Okay, fine. So again, same basic point. Okay, fine. Fair question. Nizyavmu umesu hayivamim asur linase. Now, let's say the following. Let's say that these women came back. Okay, each one reporting that their husband died. But again, there's also a brother-in-law. And the brother-in-law is also reported dead as well. And let's say that there are other brothers. And each one of the brothers does Yibum. Now, each one of the brothers absolutely can do Yibum. Meaning, let's take the following into consideration. Meaning from, let's go from each woman's perspective. From her perspective, is her husband dead? Yeah, she came back and she reported her husband dead. There's a brother-in-law who also is reported dead. And again, reported from somebody who, is, legabe her, not able to report. Okay. So, but nevertheless, there is in fact another brother. Meaning so, So even if I ignored whatever my sister-in-law is saying, legabe me, there's a mitzvah of Yibum. Meaning based on my own reporting, there's a mitzvah of Yibum. And there's also a surviving brother, meaning there are other brothers out there. So I now can totally do the mitzvah of Yibum. I'm not impeded at all from doing Yibum because it's based on my reporting legabe me. And if in fact the other brother died, it's not going to affect Yibum one way or another. Meaning because my husband died, and therefore I have a mitzvah of Yibum. Fine. And so it can be that even if there's no other reporting other than the women themselves, each one of them, if there's another brother, can do the mitzvah of Yibum. Now the Mishnah, okay, hopefully all that was clear. Now the Mishnah just goes one step further. So let's say after they do the mitzvah of Yibum with two surviving brothers, those brothers die. Okay, so now, What's the story now? Can they just simply move on with their lives? Here's the problem. The problem is that we have to go back to the original allowance of why they were allowed to remarry altogether. And that's because of the testimony that was provided from one woman on behalf of the other. So even though Yibum for them was perfectly allowable. But once that's out of the picture, meaning in this next chapter of this saga, where their husbands died, they and only they are the ones who reported their husbands died. Then they did the mitzvah of Yibum. And then the new husbands, both of them died. So now in this next chapter, the question now becomes, we have to now go back to the original reporting. The original reporting is that their husbands died, but again, incidentally, they're also reporting about, they're also giving edus on behalf of their Yavama, which they're not allowed to do. And so therefore, are we going to reinstate the original problem prohibiting them to marry other people? So this is a machlokes tanaim. Rabbi Lazar Amar Hol v'huchol Yavam v'huchol l'chol Adam. So I'm sorry. Let me read the sentence correctly. Nisyavu meso ayvamim asurim lihinase. So according to the Tanna Kamma, no. In other words, the original problem presents itself. It comes back. And Rabbi Lazar Omer, hol v'huchol Yavam v'huchol l'chol Adam. And Rabbi Lazar says, no. Once they had an allowance to marry another man, they can go ahead and they can resume with their lives. And we don't have to look back at the original reporting that they gave. Okay. Tana. Okay, we're gonna come back. We're gonna discuss it more. Tana luzu aydim uvanim v'luzu lo aydim v'lo banim shteim utaros. So over here, this brisa, all it is just simply you understand the rules of the Mishnah. So let's see how well you understand it. So let's say one woman has aydim and banim, and the other woman does not have aydim and banim. And again, same story. They both came back. They were both married to brothers. They both came back, and they're both reporting that their husband died. So here, because one of the women has both Adam and Banim, so now, problem solved. We're not really trying to solve for the problem, meaning we're just simply saying that because there's Adam and there's Banim, so now there's no longer they don't need each other. Again, consider the fact that the woman now has Adam, so that means to say that regarding the death of her husband, it's not based on her testimony, it's based on the Adam. Therefore, her counterpart sister-in-law can now go ahead and remarry because she testified about herself. Her brother-in-law was corroborated by good reporting. And because the other woman had also children, so now she's going to be fine to go ahead and remarry, right? Because again, she testified that her husband died vis-a-vis herself. She's fine. What about her brother-in-law? Right? There was children involved, and therefore there's no longer a Zika. Okay, fine. So Shtei Mutaris. Huh?
They had children before they
were. Yeah, correct. Nisyavmu Mesnu, Yavamim Asun Linase, Rabbi Lazar Amar, Hol V'huchol Yavam, V'huchol L'chol Adam. And so now the Gemara is going to go back to the Mishnah and just go over that last piece of the Mishnah. Which clearly is the most complicated part. But again, their husbands died. They're the ones reporting it. They then, again, because they're reporting not only about themselves, but about the other as well. They can't marry outside, but if they're surviving brothers, so they can marry the brothers through Yibum. Then if the new husbands die, so now what? Are we reverting back to the original reporting they gave, which is going to lock them in and prohibit them from marrying outside, or they marry their brothers? They can move on with their lives. That was a machlokas tanaim. So the Gemara now wants to know, the Shita Rebbe Lazar. What did Rebbe Lazar say? Hol v'hushu liyivamim, hushu l'chol adam. The Gemara says, I would like more clarity on the Shita Rebbe Lazar. Let's try to understand it. So by Rebbe, my time of the Rebbe Lazar, mishum d'gasav etzara me'id l'chaverta. So one possibility for Rebbe Lazar is that co-wives can testify on behalf of one another. Now, I'm saying the word co-wives over here, they're not co-wives. Meaning the word tzara over here just simply means that they don't like each other. They hate each other. Okay, let's say it clearly. They hate each other. And so in this particular case, they are not co-wives. They are yavamas. They are sister-in-laws to one another. But again, as we already discussed back in Kuf Yud Zayin, so there's a natural animosity that exists between them. I didn't say this in today's daf, but we said this back in Kuf Yud Zayin. The reason why is because yavamas are potential co-wives. Okay, anyway. So they don't like each other. So as a result of that, they can't testify on behalf of one another. Rav Elazar says, yeah, but once they married the yavam, so now we're good to go. So what's a pshan Rav Elazar? One pshan Rav Elazar suggests to Gemara is that it's a function of, they're credible. Okay. They have credibility towards one another. Now, this statement of the Gemara over here, this comment of the Gemara over here, our first understanding of Rav Elazar, that's a little bit difficult. Meaning, remember, we did the Mishnah just about 3 days ago, and the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Zion said that these are five women that women cannot testify about. Where was Rav Elazar there? Meaning Rav Elazar didn't comment over there in that Mishnah. And all of a sudden, the Gemara is now entertaining the idea that maybe, according to Rav Elazar, there is credibility from one co-wife onto another. In this case, from one Yavama onto another Yavama. Like, where was Rav Elazar earlier? So Tosa says that even in this iteration of Rav Elazar, where Rav Elazar is saying that there is credibility, it's specifically in this case. Again, consider, in this particular case, they're testifying about two women, one primarily and the other incidentally. They're testifying about themselves, and they're testifying about their co-wives as well. So Tosha says that only in this particular is scenario, where there are their testimony is principally about themselves, which they're perfectly credible about, and incidentally, they're also testifying about their sister-in-law. So under these circumstances, Rav Elazar says they're going to be believed. But if the testimony is primarily and principally about the other, so then Rav Elazar goes back to that Mishnah on Kuf Yud Zion, they're not going to be believed. Okay, anyway, that's an important limitation of our Gemara. Odelmar, the other alternative is the Mishum Dehavilei Mekalkala, Dehi Lo Mekalkala Nafsha. She's not going to be Mekalkala herself, meaning consider, right? Again, these two women came back and they said that their husbands died. Their husbands were brothers. Now, their other brothers, they did the Mitzvah of Yibum. Okay. Let's consider now, if in fact all they're doing is looking to get at their sister-in-law, they're going to also ruin themselves. Meaning, if it's not true what they're saying, so forget the fact that their sister-in-law now is going to get into trouble. She herself now is marrying her brother, right? Her brother-in-law, and she knows that what she's saying is not true. Who does that? Now it happens to be that in a moment we're going to entertain that, yeah, the hatred can be so hard, so harsh to one another, and maybe they would. But right now, that's what we're saying within the sheet of Rav Elazar. She wouldn't harm herself. Her credibility would be called into question, but not to the degree where she's going to harm herself. Okay, so Lamai Nafkamina, the Gemara says, okay, good. So we have two ways to understand Rav Elazar. The difference would be Lansuve, Letzara Mekamedida. So Iyamart Tzara Meidel Chaver Taafagav Delo Insav Mitzavina La Letzara Iyamart Mishum Dehila Mekalkal Nafsha Insav Mitzavina La Letzara Ilo Insav Lo Mitzavina Lay. And the Nafkamina would be the following: look, I just testified regarding myself that my husband died. Okay, and again, there's my sister-in-law also, which incidentally I'm testifying about. Now, according to Rav Elazar, if there are surviving brothers, I do the mitzvah of Yibum. And my sister-in-law also is going to be doing the mitzvah of Yibum with the other surviving brother. Fine. Now, is the pshan Rav Elazar, is that just simply we have credibility towards one another in this circumstance? So that would mean now that my sister-in-law does not have to wait for me, meaning she can go and marry even before I do. If, however, the pshan Rav Elazar is that a woman will not ruin herself, so the only way my sister-in-law can marry is only if I first marry, right? In other words, basically, right, she'll drink the water, but only after I drink it, to make sure it's not poisoned, if you will. So the Gemara says, my tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's consider Rav Elazar Omer, hova hujul yivim hujul l'chol adam. So since they were mutter to their yavamas, their yavams, so therefore, the mutal l'chol adam, meaning that's the language of Rav Elazar. All we just did is quote his language, but now the Gemara amplifies. Iyamar b'shalma dehilo mekalkal nafsha haynu dechi insiv mitzavina la. Ela yimar mishum detzara meidel chaver tafagav delo insiv nami. So it's clear in the Mishnah, only because they married their brother-in-laws, now they can go ahead and marry others, meaning that only when they not only said their testimony, but acted personally based on their own testimony, then and only then are they going to be credible. So Elish Mamina time into Rav Elazar Mishum de Insev Hu Velo Mekalkal Nafsha. Okay, so it's pretty clear just from the language of the Mishnah that their credibility is going to be based on the fact that they acted themselves based on their own testimony. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. The Gemara pushes back. Rabbi Lazar l'divrayim kamar lehu. Rabbi Lazar was responding back to the Chachamim. Lididi. Sarah me'idah l'chaver t'avagav d'lo. Insav misavin alei. You look, you want my own opinion? I think that these Sarahs, I'm putting that in quotes, because again, they're not actual co-wives, but I think they could testify on behalf of one another. I think they have credibility. Ela lididchu, but according to you, o du li mi'af te'echa de'insav misavin alei. So mishum dehin lo mekalkel nafsha. But look, I know you fundamentally disagree with me. But at least give me this: if the woman, after testifying, then marries a brother-in-law, meaning acting on the basis of her own testimony, you think she's going to ruin herself just to get at her sister-in-law? And v'rabbanan, what the chachamim would say in response is, yeah, I think they would do that, right? Tamus nafshi implishtim hu deka'avda. We already saw this before. The Gemara now is saying that according to the chachamim, her hatred for her sister-in-law is so great, she's going to ruin herself. Yeah, okay, fine. I get it. I'm going down with the ship. I'll take myself down, but as long as I get my sister-in-law, that's good. And granted, by the way, I marveled back at this 3 days ago, and again over here today, that the chachamim are assuming such a natural animosity that exists between these women that are really ready to take themselves down. Okay. Meaning, I guess to a certain degree, they right. This is part of human relationships and family relationships, and the Chachamim they understood this.
Why was Yibum allowed in the first place?
Because so again, when you see the case clearly, you understand because there's nothing impeding the original Yibum that was done. Meaning, again, consider they both went away, they both came back, they both reported that their husbands died. Okay, now again, I can testify for myself. I can't testify for the. For the sister-in-law. But again, if there are other surviving brothers, in other words, you discount her testimony altogether, I'm allowed to marry my Yavam. Okay. So Tashma, we're doing this one more round. Meaning again, Rav Elazar says they can testify for each other. Is it because Rav Elazar just disagrees, again, I don't want to say fundamentally because we saw the Tosfos, meaning, but still, is Rav Elazar disagreeing and simply saying they have credibility? Or no, is the Pshat and Rav Elazar is that once they act based on their own testimony, therefore it's showing us that they're telling the truth. So Tashma, so the Gemara says, okay, let's see another Braisa. Haisha Shahalcha Hiovala Medina Sayam, Uvava Amra Mes Bali, Tinasivitok Suvasa, Vitsarasa Asur, Rav Elazar Amra Holva Hutra, he, Hutra Namitsarasa. So she goes with her husband away, she comes back, she says that my husband died. She can remarry, but the co-wife can't. Again, cases that we discussed already before, but the reason why we're quoting the Braisa is for the following. Rav Elazar says, once she becomes permitted, so the co-wife becomes permitted as well. Oh. And now, Ema hol v'hutra v'nises. So the Gemara says, okay, what we mean to say is, once you see the woman who came back, who testified on her behalf, and she married based on her own testimony. That's what we'll say the Pshat and the Braisa is. Now Rav Elazar says once we see her acting based on her own testimony, then we're going to believe her. Now again, I marveled already at the hatred they have to one another. The Gemara now entertains the following. How about this? Maybe the woman who came back from that trip, that overseas trip, maybe the truth of the matter is her husband didn't die. Her reporting is just to get at her co-wife. She really hates her co-wife. Fine. We see her getting remarried. Maybe the following happened. Maybe while they were overseas, maybe he issued her a get. And she's really a divorced woman. But you know what, though? I know I'm no longer the co-wife, but I really do hate her. even as a divorced woman, I really hate her. And so now she's going to go and say, oh, you know what happened to her husband? He died. Hey, here, I'll prove it to you. I'll marry somebody else. Okay. Okay, clever. And again, it's right. It's a drama. And again, it's all predicated on hatred. And you're right. It's terrible to talk like this, by the way. This, like, it's unfortunate. And, you know, to a certain degree, you know, it's hitting on a truth. But still. And so what the Gemara now is wondering is maybe that's the explanation of why it is that she got remarried. So the Gemara says, "In dins of lisa achanam echem my skin and dins of lekohen." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but that would work if she's marrying Yisrael. But what if she married a kohen? Then that wouldn't work. Meaning, if in fact she's a grusha, she can't marry a kohen." Okay, fine. Next Mishnah. Okay, we are going to be changing topics. Not radically, meaning we're still talking about the death of a man, but now this is going to be a very graphic Gemara. Graphic Gemara is coming up regarding identification of the body. Okay, so basically from here until the end of the Masechta, right, the remainder of this parak, we're going to be talking about what is the proper way to identify bodies. Okay, this is a really serious topic, obviously with a lot of halachic ramifications. So we're gonna do is get the vocabulary, meaning we'll get the basics down in terms of what is serving as good recognition and good signs and what aren't. So ein me'idim ela pirtz afanim imachotam afa pishiyeshimanim begufa v'kelov. So in terms of recognizing a body, facial recognition, as will become clear in the Gemara, you need the full face. You need to have seen the entire face. Parts of the face are not good enough. You need to have seen the full face. Facial recognition is acceptable. However, body, in other words, you're noting something strange or unusual about the body, clothing that they were wearing, those are not considered good indicators of identifying who this person is. Also, you have to testify only after the person died. Even if the person looked like he was critically wounded. Muguyad, he had a limb cut off. Tzaluv, he was hung. Chayal chalas, an animal ate the person up. So that is, unless you see him actually die, you can't testify. Even though it looks like he suffered a critical blow, that at this point in time, if that's all you saw, that is insufficient testimony. And then we take into consideration decomposition, meaning after the person died, so now the body is going to go into rapid decomposition. So you have a three-day window from death until you can properly recognize the individual. After 3 days, decomposition is going to settle so harshly on the individual, no longer able to identify. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, Amar lo kol adam v'lo kol amakam v'lo kol ha'shav shavin. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says, 3 days, you can't use a constant figure over here in order for this window of opportunity. You have to take into consideration. Rashi says over here, for example, heat. Okay, heat accelerates decomposition. So if it happens to be the weather's really cold, so you're going to have more than 3 days. If it happens to be that the weather's particularly hot and the remains is directly under the sun, so you're going to have less than 3 days. So Rav Yehuda ben Bava just simply says this is not the kind of thing where we can give a standard amount of time. The Gemara immediately begins Tan Rabbanan. Padachas v'la partsipanim v'la padachas eme idem ajushneim imachotam. You have to see the forehead, the cheeks, the nose. In other words, you have to see the whole face. Am Rabbi v'tem Rafkanam ikra karas paneim antabam. Pasuk Yishayahu describing this phenomena that that recognition only comes through the face. Okay? It happens to be, right, again, I'm just going to put on my psych hat for just a moment. It happens to be that facial recognition is one of those things that the human being does, which is unparalleled. Well, that's not true, right? The artificial intelligence is now catching up with our ability, but it's rather remarkable how it is that we're immediately able to recognize the difference between hundreds, thousands of people just by simple facial recognition, meaning the capacity, our human capacity to go ahead and to just recognize people immediately just by their face is something which is it's really a niflas habare. It's something that, which is unbelievable and remarkable. And over here, the Chachamim were totally in touch with this idea, meaning that in terms of recognizing people, facial recognition is really the only way to properly recognize people. Abba marmarta dehava arba b'menyume. Now over here in this really, really morbid topic that we're discussing, so the Gemara has, I think, one of the funniest anecdotes that we're going to find in Shas. Okay? I don't want to overhype this, but I think this is just outrageously funny. Just to make the point about facial recognition. So Arba Bar Matu, who also went by Arba Bar Minyume, so he owed a lot of money to the Resh Galusa. So, right, Havamaske Be Resh Galusa Zuzik. Aisa Kira Davik Bevalaisa Davik Ba Paisa. So what did he want to do? He wanted to walk by the Resh Galusa, or at least any of the henchmen of the Resh Galusa, and he wanted to go unrecognized. So what did he do? So he put a little bit of prosthetic on his face. So he took some wax and he put it on his forehead, and he basically had his forehead protrude just a little bit. So just a little alteration of his face. And now what? Chalaf kamayu v'lo v'lo b'shakrua. And now he walked in right in front of the Reish Galusa. Reish Galusa didn't recognize him. Good. So in other words, I'm just walking right by my creditor. Right? Normally he would have stopped me and I'd be in big trouble. But now all I did was just a little patting on the forehead, and that's it. He didn't recognize me. Okay. I love it. In other words. Okay. Anyway, the point obviously is that for the facial recognition, you need to see the entire face. And if you're missing part of it, it's just simply not enough to properly identify the person. In this case, an alteration, but still, the point is made. Alpha pishyeshamanim. Okay. Next topic of discussion over here is that noted. Facial recognition is a way to properly identify people. And then if you read the Mishnah, which we did, so clothing, not insufficient. Even gufo, even things on his body is not going to be proper markers. So which the Gemara says, now this gets us into the topic of simanim. Okay. So I'm noting now that he's got, let's say for example, I'm using this example because the Gemara is going to bring it up in just a moment. He's got a mole. Okay. He's got a mole on his right arm. So I came back and I said, okay, I found a body with a mole on the right arm. Okay. That's what's called a simon. So where are we in simanim and halacha? Good. So if you learn Bab Metziah, this is a big part about identifying the owner of the item if in fact there's a simon. So, lemamer de simanim lav deraisa. Simanim are insufficient. That's what we're hearing here in Yavamos. The Gemara says, interesting. Verminu matzah kasher bekis of arniki uvetabas. Oh, shenimsa ben kelav afilu lizman meruba kasher. I'm delivering a get. And so my job is right now to take this get and bring it from the husband to the wife. And while traveling, I lost it. Okay. And so now I'm like looking around, like, where is this get? I lost it. I lost it for a good amount of time. But you know what? Somebody recovered a get, and it happens to have been tied to my wallet, tied to my ring. It was with an article of my clothing. So even though it was out of my view for a really long time, these are proper ways of identifying, yes, this is the get I lost because it was tied to my ring, or it was tied to my wallet, or tied to my clothing. Now, Amar Abaye, so what just happened over there? So there, the only way I'm identifying the get that I lost is because it's tied to something that's mine. How do I know that? Because I have a simon on it. So now we're talking about issuing a get. Now, a get that was out of my view, and I don't know if this is the same get, yes or no, and I give it to a woman in order so that she can remarry, we're talking about an extraordinarily serious issue. And yet the simanim are sufficient for me to identify, this is the get that I lost. And oh, by the way, the get itself has simanim as well, but right, nowadays, whenever you write a get, so you put simanim in the get itself. If you know what I'm talking about, great. If not, just you could trust me on this one. I've seen unfortunately a lot of getting. So anyway, but still, right now we're just simply describing over here the get is tied to something of mine that I can identify with a simon, and therefore he can give it back to me. So where are we right now? We seem to be at a standoff between our Mishnah here in Yavamos and that Mishnah in Bab Metziah in Gittin. Right, that a simon is a good way of identifying who the owner is. So, I'm Rabbi Lokasha, Ha Rabbi Lozben, Mahavai, Ha Rabbanon. It's a machlokus tanaim. Titanya in Meidim Alashuma, Rabbi Lozben, Mahavai, Omer Meidin. So, can I testify about a mole? I saw a mole in the body, right? I'm telling you exactly where I saw the mole, right? It was on the right arm. So, is that a good way of identifying the person, yes or no? Machlokus. So, my love, Hakamithlik, the Marsavar, Simonim, Deraisa, Marsavar, Simonim, Derabanon. And this is exactly the machlokus. Seemingly, that whether or not a simon is going to be a way of identifying. So, Amar Avad Kuli Amar Simonim Daraisa. So, the Gemara is going to push back. The Gemara is going to say, nah, not necessarily. Maybe they both are of the position that really simonim operate on a Daraisa level. And Acha B'Shuma Mitsuya Beben Gilo Kimiflagi. Over here, we're talking about a generic mole. It's really not specific. Marsa V'Shuma Mitsuya Beben Gilo, Marsa V'Einu Mitsuya Beben Gilo. And what they're debating of is whether or not there's such a thing as a generic mole. Okay. V'ika da'amri ha'cha b'shum asur lishtanos. L'cha misa kamiflugi. Alternatively, what they're arguing about is that are there going to be changes post-mortem? Right? In other words, we know about decomposition, maybe there's also going to be changes within the actual complexion, so that maybe the mole that is there, maybe it wasn't there and only developed post-mortem. So Marsavar Asur Lishanos La'achamisa, Marsavar Eino Asur Lishanos La'achamisa. And maybe that's what they're arguing about. That's a funny way to present the argument. Generally speaking, we don't argue about mitzvahs. We don't argue about reality. But okay, here we are. The Gemara goes in the other direction. Maybe both are of the position that simanim only operate on a din derabanan, and simon v'hacha bishuman siman muvak kemiflegi marsever siman muvak marsever love siman muvak. And maybe over here, even though simanim are derabanan, over here maybe the mole is a super simon. In other words, it's something which is so it's like the face. In other words, just like the face is a super simon. Meaning, wherever you hold on simanim, the Rabbanan, the Raisa, the face is a super simon, right? And maybe what the Gemara is entertaining is, maybe the mole is the same thing. Maybe it's a super simon. Okay, let's go back to where our original pushback. We're really simanim or da Raisa. So, ketani afa pishye simanim begufa v'kelev. So the Gemara says, okay, go back to our Mishnah, right? I'm telling you something about the body, meaning I didn't see the face. But I'm telling you something remarkable about the body, right? Like a mole, for example. What did our Mishnah tell us? No good. If I hold the simanim d'oraisa, why is that no good? Or let's say it's kalim. Or let's say I'm telling you about the clothing, right? I'm describing the shirt that he wore. Why isn't that a simon? If I hold simanim d'oraisa, sounds like we're looking at simanim. So the Gemara says no. Gufa d'arich v'gutz. First of all, the Mishnah is talking about what am I describing? He was 5'8". 5'8" is such a nondescript and covers so many people. Kalev de Cheshin L'Sheila. Clothing? People lend clothing to other people. So in other words, even if I hold that Simonim are Daraisa, what the Mishnah is describing is really the most nondescript pieces of information.
You can't say the same thing with the
gut,
with the clothes.
Hold that thought. V'i Cheshin L'Sheila. So the Gemara says, okay, what about saddles? Meaning, if I'm really worried that people are going to lend to one another, so if I find a saddle, how do I know that I should return it back to its owner? Don't people lend it to one another? So the Gemara says, lo shayli inche uchve de kamasiv de maskiv leila chamra. People do not lend saddles. Now, being that I'm not neither a camel owner, a donkey owner, nor a saddle owner, but the Gemara says, as a rule, no one's going to be lending a saddle to another. In other words, it's going to be too abrasive to the animal. It just doesn't happen. So matzakasha bekisav arniki v'tavas heichem adrinan. So the Gemara says, okay, now if simanim are daraisa, but we're worried about people lending to one another. So what about the get case? The case of the get where it was attached to an article of clothing. So shouldn't we worry that maybe it was lent to somebody else? So tabas chayish leziyufei. So the Gemara says no. First of all, let's talk specifically about the articles of clothing the get was tied to. It was tied to a signet ring. I lend my signet ring to nobody. Where the signet ring is my sign showing that I authenticated something, I'm not lending it to anybody. And kis v'arniki menachshe inshe v'lo mushle. My wallet, I never lend my wallet out to somebody else. Meaning aside from the fact that, you know, even if it doesn't have money. The Gemara here has an interesting comment. The Gemara says that people are superstitious, right? Rashi writes over here, I don't want my mazel to go to somebody else. I'm not going to lend my wallet to somebody else. Okay, I always am a little bit confused, meaning we're not supposed to be superstitious people, and yet the Gemara acknowledges sometimes, it's on occasion, but this being one of them, that you know what, sometimes we could be a little bit superstitious, and I'm not going to lend my wallet out to others. V'ibai sema kelev. And when the Mishnah was describing the clothing, so maybe the Mishnah was talking about the color of the clothing. That's not too particularly
vague.
Right. It's not specific. It's too vague. Okay. All right. So where are we right now? So we are really just bouncing back and forth in terms of the quality of identifying through a simon. Again, face is a super simon. Mole may be a super simon, But if it's a siman, and it can't be overly generic, right? In other words, height is nothing. And but if it's a siman, is that going to be grounds for identifying? So what we just saw is that it's a machlokas, and even within the machlokas, we're not even sure which way to go. Meaning it could be simanim adaraisa, everyone agrees to that, it could be simanim adarabanan. But in other words, I think it's just fair to say it's a major debate in the Gemara whether or not simanim are ways of identifying. Okay, continuing in the Gemara. Miguyad, where the person had a limb cut off. So, our Mishnah says that even if you saw that, you can't assume the person's going to die. Viriminu, really. Mishnah and Oalos. Adamina Matame, Ashetase and Nafsho, Afila Miguyad, Vafila Gosase. So, Tamuyla Matame, Hamichelochaye. Now, if the person has a limb cut off, so you, he's not gonna be metame until he actually dies. Meaning for Tumas Mace, you need the person to have actually died. Now what the Mishnah Olas is telling us is he's heading in that direction, meaning this is an easy diagnosis over here. The prognosis is very clear. He's going to die. It just happens to be Lagabi Tuma. Tuma does not kick in until he actually dies. The Mishnah Olas, however, is saying very clearly that you see somebody whose limb is cut off, he's going to die. Our Mishnah is telling us not necessarily. So I'm Rabbi Lokasha, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar HaRabbanan. So the Gemara says this too is a machlokas. The Tanya will enter the Brisa, Meidem ala Meguyad, Ve'ein Meidem ala Tzalov. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Af ala Meguyad, Ein Meidem and Meshiach ulechavos ulechayos. Okay, so according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, so if somebody has a limb cut off, what you could do is you could cauterize the area and the person can survive. So, and the Tanakhama disagrees. It's a machlokas. So really, we'll go on to the next part of the Mishnah. Maise be'asya. There was a story in Asia. So, somebody has leg cut off. And what happened was, is that they went to the Chachamim, and they said it depends on whether it was above the knee or below the knee. Above the knee, cannot survive. Below the knee, can survive. So the Gemara's response is Shani Maya de Marze Maka. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that case is different over there because the person was in the water. In the water, so there's no way to stop the bleeding. The bleeding is just going to continue in the water, and that's why over there, there's no way to survive. Meaning that's why, even if I held like Rishimah ben Elazar entertains the idea that even if it's a significant limb that's cut off, but you can always cauterize the area, yes, that's true. But here, in this particular case, the person was submerged in the water, no chance of cauterizing, and just, in other words, the person's just going to bleed out. So the Gemara says, okay, but I saw an Arab cut off the leg of a camel, and the camel screamed, and the camel died, and it was below the knee. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abaye Aukhisha Havya." So Abaye's comment is, that wimpy camel. Okay, in other words, next time you come up with an empirical case, so come back at me with a stronger camel, and then we'll talk. Of the many things I expected to be saying this morning, wimpy camel is not one of the things I was really expecting to say this morning. But anyway, wimpy camel. Rava Amar Bisaki Muluvanas V'Divrei Akol. And Rava says, no, that the knife over there was a hot knife, meaning the knife not only cut but cauterized at the same time. And that's why that case would be different than the case of the camel. Okay. Let's pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up with the with the slitting of the throat. Okay, again, a lot of graphic gemaras coming up. Okay, it's not a pleasant discussion, but an extraordinarily important discussion regarding identifying the death of an individual. Let's recap our daf today. Number one, the first topic that we covered is the women coming back testifying about themselves and testifying about their sister-in-laws as well. And so again, because now their testimony is covering themselves and somebody else, vis-a-vis themselves, they're fine. But because they're testifying about somebody who they have animus to, so therefore it locks in the other person. And if they're both coming back testifying about themselves and about the other, So they're going to be locking in the other person with their incidental testimony. Okay, and an extraordinarily clever Mishnah, taking basically all the information that we learned and seeing how it intersects with one another. And then a big part of the first discussion of our Gemara today is the Shita of Rav Elazar, where according to Rav Elazar, if when these women come back and provide testimony that their husbands died, and now then marry their Yavam, which they're totally allowed to do, then their Yavams die, now are they allowed to resume with their lives and marry somebody else, or do we have to revert back to their original testimony? That was a machlokes between the Tanakam and Rav Elazar, and the Gemara's discussion is, within the sheet of Rav Elazar, what is the svara, what's the basis of Rav Elazar? That was our first topic. Second topic. We are looking now to identify that this is a person that we saw die. So first of all, what do I need? So the Mishnah is very clear, facial recognition, and the Gemara is even clearer. I need to see the full face. Okay, let's say you see the person critically wounded, but that's it. You didn't see the person actually die. Can you go back and can you testify about that? So the Mishnah says no. And then the window of opportunity to testify from death until decomposition has settled in. So the Mishnah says you have a 3-day window. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava says you can't put a standard time. In other words, you have to take the factors into consideration, heat, cold, and other factors as well. The Gemara's discussion, number one, regarding facial recognition, you have to see the whole face. Number two, a big discussion in today's daf. In other words, the Mishnah says that if you testify, let's say about another part of the body, that's not enough. If you're testifying about clothing, it's not enough. In other words, you have to see the face. Where is our Mishnah stand on the topic of simanim? Is simanim a way of identifying? Machlokus, major machlokus amongst the Tanaim, amongst the Amoraim. Whether or not simanim operates min haTorah or midrabanan. And it seems to be a machlokas tanaim. And what the Gemara did is the Gemara basically swung in either direction. Maybe both of the tanaim hold that simanim are deraisa. Maybe both of the tanaim hold that simanim are derabanan. And then the machlokas over here can be just a litmus test of what exactly is a, let's say, for example, a mole in the body. Is that something which is muvak? Is it not muvak? Is it something which is standard? Okay. And that took us to the Amud Beis. On the Amud Beis, so we talked about, let's say, for example, critical wounds. Let's say a limb is cut off. So is the person going to survive that? Our Mishnah says could be. Therefore, if all you saw was just a limb being cut off, you can't testify about his death if you didn't see the actual death. And then the Mishnah Olo seems to indicate that if a limb is cut off, the person will die. And the only thing the Mishnah Olos is telling us is that Tumas Mase does not kick in until the actual death. But death is impending. So our Mishnah in Yavamah seems to be going against the Mishnah Olos. Once again, the Gemara says, maybe it's a Machlokas Tanayim. And the Gemara presents that there is, in fact, we do know, in fact, about a Machlokas Tanayim. And then questions of whether or not, if a limb is cut off, can the area be cauterized? If being submerged in water is only going to accelerate the death process? Okay. Those are our big discussions for today. Tomorrow we pick it up at the two dots. Good.